Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, and at 964 on Sirius XM Online, if you're listening that way, and at the website, stevebick.com. A morning after that big, crazy, wacky, full Wednesday that featured just wall-to-wall action, as we listened in yesterday from Hong Kong, from Happy Valley to Carlisle to Churchill Downs, through the Wednesday afternoon action, Delaware and Finger Lakes and Presk and everything else, into that night of stakes. Canterbury, Northern Stars Turf Festival, and simultaneously Indiana with their weather heat index adjustment, and there's plenty more. Lone Star with post changes for the weekend, and I think who else did I see? Louisiana as well, right? Louisiana Downs. So we've got to get all those. Get those indexed and get a handle on all those adjustments. Of course, tonight, Churchill with the Twilight Thursday card anyway. The action last night, let's go to Canterbury first because that was the big slate. And, I think a lot of the things we talked about, particularly with Kevin Gorg on Tuesday, great job by Kevin, and particularly, personally, with my own ticket, when it came to the pick five, if I had it to do over again, Kevin's advice on singling She Can't Sing, I thought Saranya had to be considered, and obviously I'm seriously considered, the Brad Cox filly, but the Lothenbach homebred mare, the Bernardini mare, She Can't Sing. Jareth Loveberry rode her with a lot of confidence. And when she took over in that Lady Canterbury, and she went off second choice, 3-2 on Saranya. And she was not good. She really never involved. And She Can't Sing. So, every time you get a favorite out of a sequence, it helps, and there were favorites that came through to kind of run it down. And I suppose the Derby win, if we want to go to the anchor leg, this was a very impressive win for Greg. Well, I mean, Greg Foley's red hot right now. The Foley barn is can do no wrong. So congratulations to Nathan McCauley and partners, Michael Azuski and Bill Mitten. They got to be excited. This is a mizzenmast colt that has now strung together a very nice series of performances. And what was impressive about this, particularly, this is third straight and second straight win in a stake, won the Caesars. We talked to Foley last week, right? Yeah, we talked to Greg last week, and he said Stitch was headed here. The way he did this, that's what was impressive. One of the reasons, I used him as a B on the tickets, but I thought pace wise, if he's going to try to go to the lead, it kind of looked like there was plenty of pace pressure, and Stitched for the first time in a victory, really, was able to just relax and sit comfortably behind some pace setters. So that's an impressive, that's his, what, fourth win? Fifth win. And the first time he's won a race like that. And if this is the way he's maturing out of an Into Mischief mare, if this is the way he's maturing, this is going to be a dangerous horse. Figs aren't out yet. They're up for Indy, but not yet for Canterbury. But this was impressive and went off at 2:10. Dwajic Chief was the second choice, and then Xavi Dave actually took a lot of money. Xavi Dave ended up, the Mac Robertson, ended up as third choice. I keyed off of Heaven Street, who kind of loomed. Got a lot of, you know, it got a lot of mixed signals. And, of course, routes and sprints are you know, they're different. But we were, you know, we talked with Kevin about, you know, the outside and you know, what to make of horses that were outposted. And it seemed to hurt, in this case, it seemed to hurt Heaven Street, who Javier Castellano, you know, seemed to be moving, you know, toward the lead. Ben's Malice as well, from the outside. And good performance by Ben's Malice to be second at 12-1 for Dave Van Winkle. And Heaven Street kind of flattened out for Castellano and ended up third at 6-1. So Stitched and the Foley Barn, 6:20 with Giroux. And in between She Can't Sing and Stitched was Mr. Dumas for Johnny Ortiz. The Majestic Perfection, six-year-old, easiest kind of winner. And one thing that was notable actually about this performance, and in fact, there were a couple of these races, you know, the five turf stakes, the performance of agent Peter Graves, who went to the lead and was, you know, pretty tough on the front end. And once Gutierrez got by, Ray Lou gets by and you know, won off by widening lengths. But at 46-1, agent Peter Graves, 3260 to place. But the 5-2 favorite, 680 for Mr. Dumas and John Ortiz. This is WSS and Hooties. And what a nice horse this has been for them, Mr. Dumas. And has kept, you know, nice company and you know, moves, you know, some rich allowance company and such. And you know, has tried some tougher spots here and there. It'd go back to Saratoga 2 years ago, was second in the Bernard Baruch. So, nice win. Seventh win of his career. This was, of course, a horse that was with Maker, and John has had him since last summer when he turned up at Colonial. And maybe that's on their agenda as well. I'm sure we'll talk to John soon enough. But Mr. Dumas, Ray Lou Gutierrez, and that was one of the things about last night that was kind of fun. Five different sets of connections in those turf stakes, if you didn't notice. And right at the beginning, speaking of Mike Maker, there was the Dub Matticat Caruso Schluffmitz. And Schluffmitz, that was an exciting race. The Curtis Sampson Oaks, the three-year-old fillies, the Brad Cox filly that we had talked about, When the Dawn Breaks, that vied for favoritism. Favoritism ended up, this was interesting, Cherie's horse, Blissful, 10-1, and then ended up going off at 5-2. And see, this was another horse that was seemingly hurt by the wide draw. And Blissful, you know, kind of came in under Chaminade and just seemed to hang a little bit. Got beaten about two lengths for all the money. That Latin Nikita was third, and I did okay in that opener. 9:40 for Schluffmitz, and that got things going. So Castellano and Maker win the Oaks. The race that tripped me up was the turf sprint. And what was strange here, this was two. Here's the winner and the runner-up. Spycraft and Plain Talk from the 13 and the 12. And they both cleared, and they ended up 1-2 all the way around. And it's not like they were setting a dawdling sprint pace. They went 21-2. 43-1. So that's what got me. I ran third and fourth with Mark of the Z, which would have been nice at 6-1. 7 cents went favored, just under 2-1. But Spycraft helped kind of boost this up price-wise at 10.40. So you had a third choice win the first leg and a second choice at 4-1 win the second leg. Favorite wins the third leg, favorite wins the fourth leg, and favorite wins the feature. However, with a second, third, and three favorites, think about this. Let me go back to my note I put up on Derby Trail, because I know it was a little tough for people to find the number. The All-Turf Pick 5 paid $544. I didn't do the parlay, but quite acceptable, right? Right, so say 5, say 50, 25, 125, 60-something, 360, 180, call it 200, 1,200. So parlay, I don't know, parlay about 300. So it looks like it paid almost twice the parlay. Just that, that's without aid of calculator. And then in between everything, there was that Minnesota Stallion Auction stake, and the very heavy favorite, actually, you know, at 1-2, Royals Little Diva, the Mucho Macho Man filly, she made $3 look good under Harry Hernandez. So there's another connection set that was fresh and different. So six stakes and six different sets of winners. Foley, Giroux, Sharp, Bachiza, Maker, Castellano, Ortiz, Gutierrez, Block, Loveberry, Miguel Silva, and Harry Hernandez. I like Harry. I've always liked Harry Hernandez from his days in New York. In fact, he won a race for us. So, fun night. I thought it was fun, and I hope some of you worked in that winner in the sprint. That's the one that we botched up. And let me just see. The Giroux, under this scenario, the Giroux, that didn't work. Only Giroux only one for five in the stake sequence. I'm curious now that we're on this topic. Kevin got tripped up. Kevin got tripped up in the sprint as well. Yep. That's the one that, otherwise he, no, actually he didn't. It's funny. He didn't use stitched in the, because I think as we both agreed that there was a lot of pay. So anyway, that was Canterbury, and they had a great night, it seems. I didn't read anything about, I didn't look for the numbers this morning in terms of, you know, records or whatever, but it was $4 million and change, right? Almost $5 million. I think $5 million actually. Yeah. So they had a great night. Looked like a festive atmosphere and scene there in Shakopee. So thanks to everybody that got involved. Some of the other action around the ovals yesterday, since we went off into this direction before I talked to you about some two pieces of sad news. One, certainly one in which we'll absolutely delve. The stake at Delaware, the loose, how about Jerry Robb? I told you I had three in here, and he runs 1-3-4, but it was the other. It was the third, the longer. Here it is. It's one of the great theories in wagering. The longest price of the three Jerry Robb horses, Mama G's Wish. And there's also, I should bring this up with Sid today. Sid's going to join us. He was tied up yesterday. How about Outflanker? This is a three-year-old Outflanker daughter, homebred for the No Guts, No Glory for Jerry Robb. Outflanker also got the stake win at Laurel on Saturday with our man Mike Lassesi, Nick Papagiorgio. So I mean, that's what's so fun about breeding, right? And he's got to be, this is a three-year-old. I know that Lassesi's horse is, I think, a six-year-old, Nick Papagiorgio, but this is a three-year-old. So, was foaled in 2019 and covered in 2018. I mean, Outflanker, how old is Outflanker? Right? He had to be 25? Is that, I gotta look up, we gotta see how old Outflanker was. Anyway. So that was Carol Cedeno, of course, who was a complete terror. I mean, we're one for one in history at Delaware with Rampillion. But if, next time we go back to Delaware with a runner, I want Carol Cedeno. Let's go to Indianapolis. And the two stakes there, and they had a bunch of maiden races yesterday, but the two stakes, you had one favorite, and this happens a lot at Indy when they have this kind of a, you know, pair of races. This is the Hoosier Breeders Sophomore Stakes, one for the boys, one for the girls. And in the filly race, you had a, you know, considerable upset, Climber, and Gennaro Garcia, Southwest Racing, and Bruce Murphy, an Indiana-bred daughter of Divining Rod. Congratulations to Country Life. And here's another stake winner for Divining Rod. Pretty cool. Dawn Martin bred this filly. So this Gaisley is the dam, a first defense dam. And a fine choice to get this mare to Divining Rod. Really cool. Climber, one off by five widening lengths at almost 12 to 1, paid 25 and change, and Manny Esquivel aboard. The favorite was Louder Than Words, who we've talked about, you know, the last couple of years, the Indiana filly for Tony Granitz. So, and Holy Justice was in there, Speedy Delivery. They were blitzed by this filly. And then the favorite, 5-2, Mowins for Mike Lauer. This is a Mike and Penny product, a Mohaman colt. One off by five under John Court. This for Penny Lauer and Clary Thoroughbreds. Nice performance. And in fact, the top three choices ran 1-2-3. Dobbs's Mr. Chaos second, and Randy Klopp's Latigo was third. So that was the stakes action at Indiana, and they did pretty well. I know that fairly late in the evening there was two races did collide a little, the Derby and I'm not sure which race, because I was watching the Derby. I was actually watching in bed. I had already laid down, and in fact, I fell victim to the ire of Tina. I didn't even have Paul Allen. I had it very, 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 very low. She has the TV on. She has to go to bed with the TV on. lots of maiden winners, actually, yesterday. Randy Klopp got one later. Honey Red, two-year-olds, won well at 6-5. And early on the card, it was a firster, two-year-olds. This was the boys. Harry's Holiday, bred by the Justice family, but owned by Steve Lewis and Southwest Racing. Gennaro Garcia here as well. So, and you also had Brendan Walsh sneak in with Biddy Boss and for Mrs. Mosley. Always happy to see Mrs. Mosley with a winner. And this one out of one of our favorites, you might remember, going back a couple of seasons, Biddy Kitty, the dam. This is a street boss. So nice to see. Next time we talk to, I loved Biddy Kitty. We thought Biddy Kitty was going to be a big star. A lot of diplomas. They handed out a bunch of diplomas yesterday. There'll be a lot of maiden breakers ready to come back in the allowance company. She's Gone won a turf mile for Vicky Oliver. This is a Curlin filly, the China Horse Club bred. In fact, China Horse Club, I'm glad that came up because they've got an expensive horse. Michael McCarthy sent an expensive baby to Indy today. I think I've got three or four maiden specials to talk to you about. Anyway, so that was Indianapolis. What else do you want to hear about from yesterday? There was that Churchill sequence that Seth got off to a good start. That Baytown Get It On. Paul McAtee, that's got to be what, like the fourth start or fifth start for Baytown Get It On? The two-year-old and gets the maiden broken for 50, and nobody claimed. Nobody claimed this Motown Colt for 50. So McAtee gets to graduate. And then Seth did a great job with Sonador at 8-1. But then he it's funny, he missed the 2-1 shot, Our Nation on Parade for Juan Cano. But then there was a 6-1 shot. It was a little tricky. Chris Hartman, Devil's Tower, won the nightcap. So the late pick four paid 618 at Churchill and 9,200 for the pick five yesterday. For those of you that were ready at 10:30 to dive into this card, there was a pricey horse. Mike Norris sent out a Tapiture gelding, El Franco, in a 10 claimer, longest shot on the board. That was the price that made the pick five sing. So there you go. There's your Wednesday recap. All right. Now to two very sad pieces of news, and I think we're going to talk shortly here to Christophe Clement for a tribute to Alec Head and 97, the great patriarch of French racing, and thoughts out to the family that really has, in a lot of ways, I don't want to say, I guess dominate is not an inappropriate word, when you think about, his career, won four arcs, you think about Freddie Head and Cricket, now a grandson as well. The clients, you think about Trev. I mean, I don't even know who you could compare Alec Head to in the U.S. Training and breeding and legacy and so forth. I mean, it's an interesting thought. I mean, who's had that kind of, multifaceted success? Christophe is going to join us, Christophe Clement, and offer some thoughts. And then for me personally, just as a fan and a horse player, the passing yesterday, the news that Hollywood Story at 21 is gone. And I mean, how many times? And you know what? I'm thinking about it, really in the breadth of the time I've been doing the show. I mean, her career started before, I mean, even before the show started in 2005, and her career was in full swing at that point. But, you know, subsequently, as her career ended, and then when she went to, you know, into service as a broodmare for George Krikorian, the pleasure personally that I got out of Hollywood Story. I mean, and in addition to, you know, just her as a racehorse and having a career that you just don't see, I dare you to go find a resume like Hollywood Story's. And by that, I mean, and you know, she, I mean, quote unquote, only won four times. However, she debuted in a maiden race, and then every subsequent start, the next 26, came in stakes. Never ran, and you know, wasn't a first out winner. She broke her maiden in the Grade One Hollywood Starlet after the Breeders' Cup. If you're not familiar with her. With her career, she had, I mean, in terms of her two-year-old season, she had the misfortune of being a classmate of Half Bridled. Yeah, so she was up against it immediately as she, you know, was starting her career. But then when, you know, once she got going, she did nothing but keep the best company. It's funny, and I'll let John Sheriffs talk about it. And you, if you've been listening for any length of time, you know that John and I have talked about Hollywood Story so many times. It's a huge loss for Krikorian, who already lost his other foundation, mayor and star, you know, runner and broodmare, starer last year. But, you know, it Hollywood Story, in addition to her exploits on the racetrack, then became, you know, just a fabulous font of nice runners, male and female. And she'll have an ongoing and long-term influence. You know, not just through her daughters, there's four or five daughters, I think, that have produced, but through Honor AP as a stallion. So just a wonderful and beloved. I've got a picture that John Sheriff sent me a picture when I reached out to him last night to say how sorry I was. He sent me a wonderful picture that George Krikorian took of Hollywood Story with her last foal, which was a tappet last year. She's got two unraced daughters, Hollywood Wife, who does appear, who I think has been bred, so clearly was not going to make it to the races, a curlin filly. So there'll be another broodmare from Hollywood Story. And then Hollywood Insider, it appears, maybe John knows more, it appears based on the obituary, I guess she was in training and then they paused and she may go back into training. I'll find out. But John sent me a wonderful picture and I'm sure I'll put it up with his permission. And you can see it's funny because there's a reflection of George Krikorian taking the picture and, very tough. One part of this with Hollywood Story is that it was because of Hollywood Story that I had an interest, took an interest in Giacomo, and that, you know, the way John had handled Hollywood Story, it kind of, I don't know, just there was a connection there that next, you know, that next classic season, and run into, run up into Derby. So we'll talk to John Sheriffs, and I'm sure we'll also get some thoughts from Sid too today. All right. Also today, let me tell you what else is going on. We've got, and I've got to go back and look and see which of the. It looks like we've got Tom Law as the last of the three-headed Saratoga Special monster. So we'll talk to Tom, and he's getting excited with Saratoga inching forward and closer. We'll get Tony in for the last time of the season before the break, and then later I want to get Rich Eng for a visit, and Todd Pletcher, who later in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock, I got a text from Todd, and he said, ugh. He said, sorry, completely forgot. So we'll talk to Todd, too, before we get off, wrap up today. As we look to bring in these two guests to pay tribute, let's also take a peek at what came up. And I got to go over here. What came up at for the weekend, and in particular, I to make it easy to appreciate what we're going into this weekend, and obviously the July 4th weekend, you've got Stephen Foster action at Churchill, and that'll be a big card to anticipate. But if you hadn't seen what's on tap for a kind of a throwback, at least for some of you may remember, the old 60 Minute Six, also known as the Sal Sinatra Six. The Cross Country Pick Five on Saturday, it's all stakes, including three graded, and it's going to be over in 55 minutes. Five races in 55 minutes. It'll start at Belmont with the Mother Goose. Got a accomplished group of five in the Mother Goose, which, of course, goes 8.5 on the main. Then they go to Monmouth with a turf sprint for fillies and mares, the Goldwood. Starts at 4:40. Goldwood is at 4:47. A minute later, you better have split screen, because the Lady Jacqueline at Thistledown, fillies and mares going a mile and an eighth, and then to Churchill at 4:55 for the Chicago, 7 furlongs, the fillies and mares, and then back to Thistledown for the Ohio Derby. So starts at 4:40 and will be over by 5:35. Pretty cool. And for those of you that just heard me say the 60 Minute Six, and you're saying, what is that? Because it may predate you. It's got to go back. It's got to go back to probably if the Magna 5 started in 2007, 8. Got to be in that range, I'm going to think. And in an answer to the Magna 5 concept, Sal Sinatra put together the 60 Minute Six, which was a logistical hoop jump. And it involved New York and Maryland and Delaware and New Jersey. And so the races could be, you know, Belmont to Delaware to Monmouth to Philly. Six races, and it would take, sometimes it went over 60 minutes, but it never would go more than about an hour and 20 minutes. And Sal's idea was that, you know, people love these multi-race sequences. And this was actually, when you think about it, this was still in an era when the big multi-race sequence, I mean, pick sixes obviously had been around, but the multi-track, multi-race sequences were, were still somewhat in their infancy. And, pick fives, the Magna 5 actually is really what got the whole pick 5 popularity rolling. But the 60-minute six, and so Sal would have to coordinate with all those racing offices, and it only lasted one season. And in fact, recently I went looking. Maybe Sal's got this. I'll send Sal a note about the payouts. And there, the old Magna 5 payouts used to be available too. You got to kind of figure out the host track and go find them on those Saturdays. I hit one. That was a big one, which was great. That's actually my biggest, multi-race hit. So how did I get here? The cross country pick five feels like the centerpiece of Saturday. And the sequence goes 5x12x10x7x8. So it's a nice mix. It's a nice, very nice mix. So we'll look forward to that. We'll get Nick on it, and, we'll try to take that down. All right. Now, I will mention we're going to Mexico. So if I can get my own take on this Friday, I'll try. I'll try to get it done, because I have no idea how. I don't know how strong the internet options are going to be, and we're going to be. I think we're traveling. Well, we get. I don't think it's a bad. It's a bad flight, right? We're going Baltimore, Cancun, so. I just don't know what to expect. I haven't been there in forever. I cannot remember the last time we were. I haven't been with Tina. I think I've been twice to Cancun. Once I got there right after a hurricane. There had been a hurricane like 6 or 8 weeks earlier, and things were still in disarray. I remember the beach. Wherever I stayed, it was a new property, and the beach had been basically wiped out. Yeah, those are my memories of of Cancun. So this is we bought this trip as a fundraiser, one of those fundraiser. In fact, I was the MC for the Captain Gala, and they said, well, we've got two trips to Cancun. So I auctioned them off, and they both went, they were well received. And then they said to me, oh, we can do more of those, as many as you can sell. So I kept going. So Tina said, I want to go. So we ended up buying one of them, and we haven't been able to use it. 3 years. It's been 3 years. We bought it, I think, in 19. I think so. I think the summer of 19. And we were expecting to go in 20. And that, of course, got scuttled. And we scheduled it. I think this is the third time we've tried to schedule. And, we had to kind of ride out the pandemic. So we made it. And Tina said, are you, can we actually go? Are you going to be, willing to? Yes. So that's how this came about. Christophe Clément will join us later in the morning. He's tied up with one of his sets that, if you've never, I've told you before, at Belmont, they come out. There's about eight of them. Eight Clements will come out at once, and they line up along the fence, and then then they go. So Christoph said he will get him after 10:30. All right, and he'll pay tribute to Alec Head, who had a, he and I'm sure his brother Nicholas as well have had a long relationship with. So let me go back then, as we then will turn our attention to John Sheriff's. And that'd actually be perfect. All right, so let's let me let him know, Case. And actually, I think you're good. Yeah, you're good with John. John Sheriffs. John, good morning. I knew we'd have this conversation at some point, and I hate to have it. So sorry for you and the barn, and for George Gregorian.
Yeah, that was sad to hear that Hollywood story passed.
You know, one thing, John, not to start in this direction, but it's always a little tough to swallow when a mayor, you know, who's put in this kind of service and has had so many good babies and is going to have a lasting influence, and you know, they don't seem to get a chance to really have a retirement. Not that foaling is you know, it's once a year, but they don't get a chance to kind of relax in a field for the next 10 years, it seems like stallions do.
Right. I don't know. George has his own farm in Kentucky around Keeneland, and he's there quite a bit, and really enjoys his horse. So I think horses feel that, right? They feel like the people around them appreciate them, and I think that makes a big difference. So I wouldn't think of them just being out in the field and all by themselves, or. So I think that they get the vibe from the people around them.
Let's talk about her career, and then we'll get to the offspring. But you and I have talked about it a lot over the years, because you know she's literally of contemporary female runners. She's my favorite horse of all time that I got to see and enjoy. And she's got such a unique resume, John. I mean, talk about her when she first arrived.
Well, you know, she broke her maiden in a grade one race, the Starlet. And George had a lot of faith in her, and he, you know, come on, John, we can run in this race. And it turned out great. And the funny thing about the Starlet for me on a real personal basis with my wife, Dottie, is we had gotten married the day before, so she told the photographer, oh, let's get a picture because that's going to be our wedding picture. So the Hollywood story and the Starlet and our wedding are all wrapped up into one. So it was quite a day.
She was a purchase, a $130,000 yearling, right? Book one. The July sale right. From George.
Yeah, right. And you know, and her regular exercise rider Michelle Jensen rode her every day for her whole career, and I think she was a big part of the Hollywood story's success, because she was very attached to that filly. If you go out in the Hollywood Park and to walk to the track and get to the last barn and stand in the last barn, in front of the last barn for about 20 minutes, I'm thinking to myself, come on, Michelle, please scalp her. I've got some other things I have to do. But she just take her time and you know, scalp the filly. And it was just a great relationship that Michelle and Hollywood Story had.
There's a couple of interesting things about her from a pedigree standpoint. She's out of a Dynaformer mare, and who was a modest winner and had Black Type, Wife for Life. And she was Wife for Life's first foal. And then subsequently never really had anything approaching you know, the prowess of Hollywood Story. And also, you know, sometimes first foal, they can be a little on the smaller side. And I don't think of Hollywood Story as being, you know, smallish at all.
Oh, not at all. No, she was not big like a Zenyatta or something like that, but she was very solid. I mean, she had a hind end that, you know, as a horseman, you dreamed that your horse could have that. She was very strong. She was somewhere between a quarter horse and a thoroughbred, and she had that Dinoformer toughness about her. Really special.
I mentioned at the start when I, as part of, you know, an introduction to, you know, the conversation I knew we were going to have, that, you know, she had the misfortune, at least early on, before she started to go two turns, she was part of a very good class, and you know, including, you know, the likes of Ashado, but right on the West Coast, John. I mean, the horses that she was mixing it up with before Breeders' Cup, I mean, it's unbelievable. And of course, being, you know, having to face half bridled repeatedly, that didn't do her or anybody else any favors among the filly set that winter.
Right. No, she was. I think in the I think it was the Wilshire. I'm not exactly sure. I think it was the same day that Giacomo won the Kentucky Derby. She was in this race, and she almost fell down to her knees. And I don't know how she got up and won that race, but she just was all heart. And I remember thinking, wow, that's a good sign. She could do that.
Earlier in the day, the Hawthorne,
right? Yeah.
I mentioned the resume and how unique it is, and how, John, I do not know of another horse, and I don't think I'd ever seen it, debuted in a maiden race and then 26 starts subsequently in nothing but graded stakes.
She was very tough. She was a real campaigner.
And of course, the other part of this that I always come back to, four stake wins, the Vanity, the Hawthorne, the Biakoa, and the Starlet, and they all came at Hollywood.
That's where she was all the time too. We stabled at Hollywood. I don't know if it's coincidental, but that's where we were.
Well, and it's not like she didn't run well at Del Mar or at Santa Anita.
All right. No, she was. You know, she was, like you said, she was very solid. She was a really serious racehorse.
P-Val was on her for the Starlet. Victor was on her for the Biakoa and the Hawthorne. And David Flores, in her last win, the Grade One Vanity. You know, John, there is one part of her resume, and she ran very well in that Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly, to be fourth as a maiden with half bridled, of course, winning. Ashado was second, and Victory USA was third. So that gives you an idea of who she was facing. But when it came to the subsequent distaffs, her resume is very similar to Take Charge Lady, who would have these really nice campaigns, and then for whatever reason in the distaff, it just didn't meet with any success.
Yeah, I don't know. I really can't answer that question. I remember when she ran in the Kentucky Oaks, and it was a muddy track, and there were a few other California horses in the Oaks that day, And I think she finished fourth. I can't remember exactly, but I think it was around fourth.
Fifth.
And fifth, okay. So in that race, she'd never been on a sloppy racetrack like a lot of horses in California, because it's usually pretty dry here. But she had the tenacity and the strength to run over that track and make a pretty good showing of herself, where the other California horses were all farther back. So I always thought that was a big race for her. When we went to, did we run in the, at the Belmont? Is that where the Breeders' Cup was one year?
The first one was at Santa Anita as a juvenile, and then subsequently Lone Star, then Belmont in 05, and then Churchill in 06.
Right. So the thing I remember about going to Belmont was we put her in. They had the holding barn then, right? So all the horses had to assemble.
Yes.
The holding barn, right? And so it was windy and it was cold and everything. And so we got the stall right in front of where the wind was blowing in. And so we tried to get the man at the barn. Hey, do you think you could close the door, please? And so he said, "Well, I've got to call maintenance or somebody to get it done." So I thought, "Wow, how did this happen?"
Well, and when you say cold, for people, there's people who were just warming up from that day at Belmont. To be honest,
yeah.
17 years later, it was unbelievable how miserable it was. The other thing, I brought up the Dynaformer mare, the dam, Wife for Life. Because you did try her on the grass, and I had forgotten, in fact, that she was third in that American Oaks behind Ticker Tape, no less, beaten three lengths with Danny Sorensen, and then you also ran her in the Gamely, and she was only beaten two lengths. She was fourth near the end of her career.
Right. Yeah, you know, at that time, the dirt racing was a little more popular, and there were more opportunities, I think, for fillies running on the dirt than the grass. And always the grass, you're a little bit subject to, the trip, because the turns are real tight, and on the grass, obviously, you need a horse who can run the turns really well, and then they need a big kick at the end. So dirt racing is a little bit more dynamic in the sense that, you know, you can have a good pace and your horses can come from off the pace if you have a good pace. And I think it's just a little more, I think a little bit different, and a horse can win in a lot of different ways on the dirt, where the grass is somewhat limited.
Well, and she had, she had a style. She had sort of a mid-pack stalker style.
Right, right, yeah.
And could finish. When the numbers all came down, 27 starts, 4 wins, with the 2 grade ones, and 6 seconds, 6 thirds, $1.1 million, and then a broodmare career, that is, is as good as any of her contemporaries. Just a parade of runners. And they, at least for a while, John, it seemed like they all had the same development curve, in terms of, like she had. I mean, right. Obvious talent, but needed, but not precocious.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They seemed to like to go, two turns. And had some speed, but not brilliant speed. So that was quite a bit like her.
How many of her babies did you handle?
I had I had Hollywood Girl. I don't remember if I any others. Tell you the truth, I can't remember if I had any other ones.
There was, in terms of the black type, Hooray for Hollywood, which was that first colt who was a Stormcat.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was okay. 212,000 in earnings, three-time winner in 17 starts. And she had an unraced AP Indy filly who did not produce either. Then there was Hollywood Heroine, a Medaglia d'Oro that only made one start. Then Hollywood Idol. And then came Miss Hollywood, who was nice, was a stake winner. And Hollywood Strike was a favorite that looked like he was going to be a nice horse. Then Hollywood Star, Dale Romans had one or the other, either Star or Strike, and then Hollywood Girl, and then Honor AP.
Right. Honor AP.
In terms of, you know, in terms of his legacy too now, I mean, he's just, you know, the as a stallion to have, you know, in addition to the daughters, you know, to have the potential, who knows, you know, what he's gonna get.
Honor AP had a beautiful stride. He had a stride that was probably 28 feet. He had the ability to carry his speed the whole way. So he was very unique.
How many daughters has George retained that are producing?
You know, I don't know. I haven't asked him that question. I don't know. She was such a good producer, and they did so well at the sale with him. I think, I don't know. I don't know which ones. She had a Tappet filly, and I think it was a filly, and I think he might have kept her. She was in the September.
That's the last one. That's her last. Her last foal. The name is Hollywood Insider, and I guess that Hollywood Wife, the Curlin, who's only a 3-year-old, she's been bred apparently, so she was not going to make the races.
All right. Yeah. So I guess maybe the Tappet filly.
Well, John, what was in terms of her personality around the barn and in the stall? How was she to be around?
Oh, she was very nice. She was very, very nice. You wouldn't even know she was there. She was quiet. Never needed any special attention. You know, was always a good doer. She was very good.
Well, one of you know, you've had, obviously, I don't think it's fair for me to ask you to rank the fillies and mares, but between Zenyatta and Hollywood Story and Manistique, that's a pretty
life
good
is sweet. Don't forget
life is sweet. That's right. All right, I'll give you that. I'll give you the four. I'll give you the. I guess it's a four-pack. It's the superfecta, the sheriff superfecta of filly and mare stars.
Yeah. And then there was a little Zardana.
You've always been partial. You always liked her. Wow. John, it's funny. I've had half a dozen people on Facebook and Twitter.
How about Harmonious? The Dino
Harmonious,
the one, the Queen Elizabeth.
Well, they don't. I don't know. I don't know if they're up there with the rest of that group.
No.
To be honest, I mean, in fact, now you're going to make me look here. I'm going to go to the sheriff's profile, and let's see. Let's do it by earnings. Zenyatta would be first, of course. 7 million. Life is sweet. Manistique, Hollywood Story, then Harmonious, Star herself. What about Star?
Oh yeah, what about Star? Right, there's another Dinoforma.
Yeah. And, you know, another grade one winner, Hard Not to Love.
Oh, yeah, Hard Not to Love. My goodness. Yeah. Yeah, she's retired now.
Hard Not to Love. I tell you, John, that you've got a... It's a pretty nice resume, to say the least, and Hollywood Story, one of, in fact, 8 millionaires that you've helped, and I know that most people, if they said, "Who's your favorite, John, sheriff's mayor?" 98% of the answer would start with a Z, but I'm going to side with Hollywood Stories, John. Right from early on.
Manistique, how brilliant was she, though? Won her first three races by 30-something lengths.
That was back when you were known as a first out trainer.
Right.
For 505, right?
Exactly. Yeah, they liked to bet on the first time when the horses ran. So, you know.
The legacy will go on through some daughters and through Honor AP. John, sad to do this, but and please extend thoughts to George Krikorian. Can I put that picture up? Is it okay if I put that picture up you sent me?
Sure. Yeah, sure. No, I'm sure it's okay. And I'm sure George will appreciate it because, like I said, he's a hands-on owner. He's a man that truly, truly loves his horses and does the best by them.
Well, and has really had, you know, has obviously managed things. The $130,000 purchase as a yearling that, you know, then brings back $1 million as a racehorse and has had this, you know, Blue Hen legacy that she crafted as a broodmare as well. Hollywood right. Story. And I should mention, I haven't mentioned, she was bred by Vinery. She was a Vinery product originally.
So I should
acknowledge Vinery and their hand in this and the pairing of, and I'll let Sid Fernando's next. So I'll let Sid riff on the breeding and, you know, and the legacy. John, thanks so much. We're going to see you this summer. I can't make it out to California this summer, but, You got an Eastern swing maybe planned for a visit?
Well, maybe. I've been thinking about Lady T in the test, so we'll see.
Nice.
Yeah.
How are your 2-year-olds? What are we going to see at Del Mar?
Oh no, I'm really excited. We bought a really nice Curlin colt out of the Ocala sale. His name is Skinner. He looks really good. He's coming along really well. Then we have a nice Justify filly, Justique, that hoping to run early in the meet with Skinner.
Very nice. I'm glad I asked. And of course, you mentioned Lady T coming out of the Summertime Oaks. That a turn back might be a very clever maneuver.
That's what I hear.
You're the greatest.
Oh, we love that turn back.
That's great. What's next for Express Train?
The San Diego, I think everything goes well, you know.
Excellent. And I should ask about Bernard. Did we talk after the Whittingham? That was actually Derby, around Derby time, so it might have gotten lost in the shuffle. Beyond Brilliant, that won the Whittingham.
He's good. He ran a really good race there, and he's a horse that's matured early on. He's a little tough down the backside. Now he's learned to kind of relax down the backside and then have something left for the finish. So he's really changed over the last few months.
And I'm going to ask you about one other somewhat offbeat four-year-old that there may, it seems like you're treading water and that you've got something in mind for Parnelli, who won again like last week or 2 weeks ago.
Right. Yeah, no, Parnelli, he's another horse that that needed a little bit of racing and learn how to handle himself in a race. And yes, he's we're thinking that if he can just develop a little bit more, then he's stakes caliber too. Yeah. He dead heated with a horse, as you know, that won the Gold Cup. And
yep.
He's getting there. He's close.
And you broke through a little bit in the Wilshire. Speaking of Hollywood races, you broke through with that England's Rose, the now what 6 year old English Channel. Yeah. Nice to get her some black type.
Yeah, it was. She's been a really nice filly all along, but has had a lot of problems along the way. So it's really exciting and satisfying to see her run well and get slack type and become that type of horse. So we're hoping that over the summer, she'll continue to improve.
And tell me too about the Moss runners are a little fewer and far they're between, but Pelagio looks like this is a 3 year old that is gonna graduate soon.
Right. Oh yeah, for sure. Because late in that race, he just started leaning in a little bit, and I think that cost him the race. So I think that also. You know, with a little more experience and him being able to handle racing just a little bit better and be able to stay on the bit all the way down to the wire will make a difference with him also. So we're pretty excited about Pelagio. We think he's a horse that has a lot of talent and is a horse with like a lot of nice horses. They have a big stride, so they don't have to run faster. They just have to continue to lengthen their stride and maintain whatever they have, whatever speed they've generated.
Well, this is an interesting horse. This is a practical joke, and as mentioned for the Mosses, the race was a mile, and I see that actually worked yesterday, a near bullet yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's doing very well. And
cool.
For the Mosses, one more two-year-old I have to give you for the Mosses.
Yeah.
is a Nyquist two-year-old by the name of Momad. Hopefully he'll be running in one of those early races at Del Mar also. He's really precocious. So he's pretty exciting.
Well, this was a productive visit, John. I appreciate it. I believe me, everybody's the notebooks are filled up. Everybody's excited. Nomad, Skinner, and Justique. All good names, too. Those are all three good names.
Yeah, aren't they? They're really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. John, thanks for this. I appreciate it. I wasn't letting her passing go without a proper send-off.
Well, that was very nice of you, Steve, because so often racing is just about today or tomorrow. So it's really appreciated when you think back and remember horses like that.
Yeah, well, I historically, my favorite mare of all time is Gallarette, and of contemporaries that I've gotten to see and bet on, Hollywood Story will always be.
I have a picture in my room of Gallarette.
She was that's something. Everybody gets all ooey and aye, John, about, you know, oh, the Phillies, a Philly facing the boys. How about one that faced the boys more than she faced the girls?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, when I lurked at Loma Rica, we had like a great-granddaughter gallerette, or a granddaughter.
Nice. Out of her? That was a... Nice. Remind me to tell you my Gallaret story when it went. And this is involved with Zenyatta. So remind me to tell you have I ever told you the John Nehrud on air story with Zenyatta and Rachel?
I don't remember if you did or not.
Things have changed so much in the world that and only John Nehrud could have said this. John, let me put it this way. When I asked him for a comparison from his viewpoint, he went on and on and on about the feminine qualities of Zenyatta, and kind of inferred that Rachel had a more, you know, masculine look about her and physique, and then he brought up Gallerette and described her in a way that you just can't. You just can't describe women anymore. What am I going to say to John Nehrud? I had to burst out laughing. There's people listening that heard that live with Nehrud, and they're laughing right now too. So I'll finish that story off air.
Okay.
John Sheriffs, everybody. John, I hope we see you for the test.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
Thanks so much. John Sheriffs, everybody. Unbelievable. Hollywood story. And you just got yourself, looks like, three first-out potential winners, Nomad, Skinner, and Justique. And keep an eye on this Pelagio, who's going to be making a third start. Let's take a break. I'm behind now, and I know that Sid's got a limited window today. We got plenty to do, though. We got Christophe Clement to pay tribute to Alec Head. We've got Tom Law. We got Tony. So all kinds of things yet to do. Todd Pletcher later. Rich Eng. As we hurtle toward our midsummer break. And you know I've always got that same description of my mindset at this point, which is, you know, kind of reaching for the wire. Although I got to admit, I'm not as... I don't know why. I suppose my mind was occupied elsewhere. By the way, before I forget this, I will put on Twitter and Facebook for you. I mentioned that Sunday afternoon, my brother, the press agent, my brother, the Broadway press agent, got us tickets to see Ain't Misbehavin'. Well, I guess now it's Tuesday, and probably yesterday in the New York Times print edition. Absolute rave. The New York Times theater critic was on hand at the Barrington Theater Company performance, and absolutely gave it a critic's pick, which is, you know, the highest recommendation. So it'll be at Barrington Stage. Barrington Stage is in Pittsfield, not in Great Barrington. It's there till July 9th. So if you've never seen it, Ain't Misbehavin', and you know the backstory is Fats Waller. It's all Fats Waller's music, and it's just fabulous. I mean, I saw the original in 1978. So, with well, Nell Carter. Nell Carter and Andre... Andre DeShields, I think. Nell Carter was the big star. Actually, not. You know what I'm going to do now, Casey? I'm going to send you a link to something from Fats Waller. All right, you probably don't even know how many Fats Waller songs you've heard in your life. So, Ain't Misbehaving through July 9th, Barrington Theater Company. Get some tickets. Get some culture in you. Can't live by horseplay alone. Well, we can, actually. Taking a break. We'll come back. Sid Fernando joins us next. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire, Maryland.